You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering that you're listening to right now. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza, and today is another interview episode. We've got a very special guest joining us today, but before we get to that, I do want to shout out our two sponsors for today's episode, Cardsphere.com. You know them, you love them. Get the referral link in the description, sign up for Cardsphere, and start trading right now. Cardsphere, get your cards here. It's time to get your collection up to snuff. Make sure you're pruning, too. Like, you got some cards you want to get rid of. You want to trade them. There's some use for them over on Cardsphere. Trade them to folks who want them so you can get cards that you want. Cardsphere.com. Referral link in the description. And then also, our second sponsor for today's episode is Bonebox Games. Boneboxgames.com. Get yourself some premium deck boxes. They got playmats. They've got stickers. They've got, I believe, pins as well. But the deck boxes are the stars, straight up. I have four of them now at this point, I think, and they're all phenomenal. They feel like you're treating your deck to something nice. And if you check out with promo code BOLCAST, you get yourself a nice little discount as well. Shout out to Evan Jesse over at Bonebox Games, and I send him a little smooch. Mwah! All right, now we're diving in to the episode itself. I don't know why I played the music. I thought it'd be fun to interrupt it at some point because we'd already started. But our guest today is, I'm going to describe my guest today by his relationship to me. This is how I know him. My guest today is the person who has commented the most consistently on not all the Am I the Bolus articles, but a great majority of them. Every week, a new article goes up, and I can guarantee at some point or another, today's guest is in the comments having brought insights and new ways to look at things. And I've always found it quite refreshing and insightful. So I said, why not bring this guy on the podcast, have a chat with this guy. So today's guest is someone that is just a fan of the article series and engages with it. And I just wanted to have a chat with him, Stephen Ball. Joins us today. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. So, is that all fair to say? I think that's pretty much what how I think of it as is, like, you are somebody that engages with the column the most, and
yeah,
you're quite insightful. There are lots of people that write about write in the comments and stuff that's quite active out there sometimes, but you are consistently, like, a weekly reader, and I really appreciate it. So first of all, thank you for being a reader of Am I the Bolus on EDH Rec and Commander's Herald for all the years it was on there.
Yeah, I think it's a great column. I was interested in it from the start because I sort of come from a background where for the first several years with EDH becoming popular, I kind of dismissed it. I did have a single deck for a while. Usually I just have one deck, but I didn't really play it actively. And then I sort of really got into it around 2018. But okay. I like to play a lot of weird decks, off-the-wall decks. you use a lot of obscure combos or try to do something unusual, something that, especially things that don't really work in other formats. So that was kind of interest to me, seeing some of the scenarios other people got themselves into and the reaction to that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I haven't seen a couple of your deck lists because you've sent a few in. Hold on a second. Steven submitted this is a record you hold. I don't know if you know this. The longest Am I the Bolus submission I've ever received. It's one that I have to figure out whether or not I can get away with writing about in the column because we have a word count limit and stuff. But I think that having seen a few of your deck lists, I'm like, okay, I like where this guy's head's at. You know what I mean? That's my first thought is I'm like, bonus points for Gorn Silly and Weird. That's what I'm all about. I want you to enjoy exactly the way you want to enjoy it. And to you, it seems like you put a lot of effort into discovering something new about the game and then maintaining that deck in that route. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah.
If you had to pick a signature deck of yours, do you have one that comes to mind when I say those words?
So oddly enough, I don't really think that I don't think I have a single signature deck.
Okay. I mean, to be fair, I understand.
Yeah.
You're someone who speaks of many decks and as though they're all still together.
Yeah.
So when I see you in your comments, you'll talk about this deck and this deck, and then it'll get mentioned again much later on. And I think to myself, man, you must have a ton of decks. Do you have like a current deck count at the moment?
Well, I was just taking a deck apart before this work on whatever my next one is going to be. But I usually have between 8 and 12 decks together at any given time.
Okay, so it's much better than I thought it was, because I thought you just had just stacks and stacks of decks that you never stopped. You just like, I made this deck, it's staying together, never gonna, you know, let it go. But I do have your, like, you sent me deck lists via Moxfield when you submitted that article submission. When you submitted the submission, okay, Mikey, don't you use words for a living? But you've got so many decks in your Moxfield profile. Like, you've got many, many decks that span years, and I love this. It tells me that you're somebody who's been active brewing, someone who loves getting the gears turning, and I identify with this big time, because I too have like something crazy like 100 decks online that I'm tinkering with all at the same time, and then I forget and then ignore and then come back to. Like, I started Mr. Negative when Spider-Man came out, but I also haven't looked at it in a week, but I know that I'll look at it in 2 months and be like, oh yeah, this deck was pretty fun, maybe I'll do it, you know?
Yeah.
Of your current decks, if we were to play right now, what's one that you would reach for? Maybe a better way to ask the question that I was asking before, the signature deck thing.
I probably mentioned it in the submission, with which I, for the record, was not trying to set a record.
No, I know, I understand,
but
I totally get it.
the thought occurred to me that maybe it was going to run too long for an article on the column, but then I thought, well,
sure,
I use three decks, maybe he could pick one or something like so. It was an idea about something that had come up as far as sort of explaining the idea that I don't know when I'm crossing a line when I'm playing something that's just not in any sort of overpowered way exactly, but something that the rest of a group might not expect walking in.
Sure. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you'd also written about a deck that I was wondering if you still have it together. Which I think is your Torsten deck.
That deck is it is currently a bunch of cards are sleeved for it, but I had taken cards out of it to build another deck. I am likely going to put that one back together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one that I think of when I think of you. But if you were to reach for a deck right now and we're playing,
yeah,
which one?
I think it would be actually one of the ones that I did include in the submission, the Jasmine Boreal deck, which I had called Paint It Green.
Yeah, that's a silly list. It's, if I'm not mistaken, pre-DH, which is why you're using Jasmine Boreal as your commander, or is it just style points?
Well, the reason I'm using her as commander is because I am trying to, and I believe they're all on that Moxfield profile you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I am trying to eventually have built and played a deck helmed by each of the original 55 legends from Legends.
Ooh, that's a fun project.
I believe I have 6 more to go.
Oh, gee. Okay, so wait, does this count the Legends Retold, or is it just the original?
I was just doing the cards. Originals.
Okay. Okay. So, I didn't realize there were 55 in the original run. That sounds like way more than I would have guessed.
Yeah, and I thought I was going to complete that project by the end of this year. I will probably not actually complete it until next year because...
Six more decks is a little tough.
Yeah, but...
And we're recording this like mid to early November. Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in.
So yeah, that deck is the one that I like almost always find myself reaching for first.
What is it about that deck that makes you go, this is the one that I want to play first?
It is, well, one thing I like about it is that it is, I have not found it err on the side of being too high power level.
Okay.
One of the challenges when I like to build a lot of decks that use combos or, you use certain cards that I remember playing when I was younger that I had a lot of fun with.
Mm.
A lot of the time, a lot of those decks, even if I didn't design them to be especially powerful, even if I don't think that they're, you know, bracket 4 or whatever, although that wasn't the term that was around for most of this history anyway.
Right.
But it does sometimes end up that I'm in a group with a newer player or where I don't realize that the other people are all playing pre-cons or something.
Sure.
And this is a deck that usually loses pretty badly because it does have some strengths. It's not completely toothless, but sure. but it tends to be very fair.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something that you assume of a deck that's held by one of the original vanilla legends from Legends. Like, Jasmine Boreal is a 5-mana 4/5, and that is it. Legendary Human.
Yep.
It's no more important text on that card. Other than the Richard Kane Ferguson illustrated it, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's also, like, you've got a fair amount of banding in this deck, from what I could see. Which must be interesting to have to explain to players.
Yeah.
Which I'm assuming you're doing.
I have had to explain how banding works a lot.
Steven, because it might be beneficial to our listenership, would you mind giving us the pitch for banding, the explanation of banding that you give to players that you're playing against when you pull out this deck?
So, when... any number of creatures that have the ability banding are attacking, they can form attacking bands that all have to be blocked by the same blockers. And if anything can block even one attacker in that band, they can block the entire band. And a band can include a single creature up to one that does not have the banding ability.
Okay.
And if my band is blocked, that means I get to decide how damage from the blockers is distributed on the creatures in the attacking band. On the other hand, if even one creature I am blocking with has banding, I get to decide how the damage from the attacker is distributed among blockers.
Uh-huh.
This also
means... So
there's
a good reason this mechanic is not really used anymore.
Well, this also means that if I have an Aisling Leprechaun, which turns all creatures blocking or blocked by it green, and I have a green ward on it as an enchantment, so that it has protection from green, and it is attacking in a band with Taunting Elf, so that which has been given banding. Because the deck has multiple cards that can give creatures banding. That means that all of the blockers have to block that band. They will all turn green, and I will direct all of their damage onto the Aisling Leprechaun, which has protection from green. And then my other attackers get through! So that's one of the ways the deck tries to win. It is not especially quick.
No, it doesn't sound like it. It's very silly, though. I mean, I was looking at the list going, paint it green. Why'd you call it paint it green? And I saw the painter's servant, and I saw, you know, I saw a couple cards that perked perked up my ears, like a Circle of Protection green and Green Ward. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what's this all about? And then I was like, oh, okay, well, this Leprechaun's pretty silly. What a silly, silly card. I can't believe this is a thing that was printed, let alone that is being used in a deck right now. Like, that's great. That makes me very happy. A card called, like, this Ashling Leprechaun, this card that Stevens just described from Legends, a 1/1 that turns creatures green when they are blocked or block the Leprechaun. Or is it by it specifically? Okay. Whenever this creature... Okay, by it specifically. The Oracle text is, whenever this creature blocks or becomes blocked by a creature, that creature becomes green. And you've got that in a deck with something as modern as... Let's see, what's the most modern card I can pick up here? Phytohydra is from Ravnica and recently reprinted in Ravnica Remastered.
Yeah, because the deck is pre-3DH, it doesn't use any cards from newer than... I believe New Phyrexia is the last set that's legal in pre-DH.
Fair. I mean, it is still fun to see that that's... Phytohydra is not a card that I expect to see in many decks, let alone in a deck where it's like, yeah, guess what? The whole plan, make things green. That's the idea. Make things green in an attack. And your header image for this deck is actually the Leprechaun. It really feels like you built around the Leprechaun first, you know? That's kind of fun. Yeah, what a silly deck. This is really fun. I appreciate the way you look at the game. I have to ask, like, because, again, my experience with you is largely just in the comments section of my article series. And, you know, over time, you give us some your opinion on this, this, and that, and you have some great insights on the story that is told in the article and so on. And you get to know your kind of preferred style and your insights, your thoughts on the game and how you like to approach it. And I do think that we connect on the thing that is, I want it to be interesting for myself and my opponents. Like, you're putting together some sort of experience for them to remember in some regard. And I think that's really fun. And I think that this deck really falls within that. Like, you have that other deck that was the Maelstrom Wanderer deck that's based around Eureka, which is that old... God, is it an instant?
It's a sorcery.
No, it's a sorcery. Eureka is a silly sorcery that has EMC, E equals MC squared in its art. This is like a card from Legends that is on the reserve list, of course, but it's like a $400 card. And it's 2 green-green, starting with you. Each player may put a permanent card from their hand onto the battlefield. Repeat this process until no one puts a card onto the battlefield. What a fun, silly card to be doing. Like, bring this to the table. Tell everybody, all right, everybody dump your permanents. Let's see what we get out of it. And you've got nothing but Cascade stuff in this. You are going to get Eureka. You're going to dump your hand. And you've got Maelstrom Wanderer, which gives everything haste. Seems pretty badass. Seems like a wild experience to have. You never see Eureka. You get to uncover, like, remember this kind of card, but it's also in the same breath. You've got cards from the supplementary, like, Lord of the Rings. What's it called? They had, like, that scene card thing that they did where it was just mechanically unique cards that weren't in the Commander decks but are still part of the Commander set, per se.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I forget what it's called, but they're
Call Forth the Tempest is the card in your deck that does that.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, I don't know what they call that scene box thing.
Yeah, it's
either way, this is a fun deck.
Officially
too.
Part of the Lord of the Rings Commander set, but it's not in the Commander decks. It's like,
exactly.
Yeah,
I have to ask, like, because what is it about this kind of why do you build this way? Why do you find this to be the most interesting way to build? And as someone who also feels similarly by looking at your lists and the comments over the years, I am with you. I understand, but I'd like to discuss, like, what about you makes you feel like this is, I build like this for me and for my opponents. This is what I get hooked on. How do you approach your deck building?
Well, I guess the number one thing about that is that I want to try to do something that piqued my interest and something that I do it in a way that I feel like it will have some meaning to the rest of the table. So while I'm not going to say I would never do, you know, like some of the more typical exhibition deck things, like a deck where everybody's wearing a hat or whatever, I prefer to do something that mechanically has some sort of point of interest where people don't usually see it.
Right. I completely identify with that. I find myself picking commanders based on that feeling, for the most part. Like, if I were to talk about Rasslin the War President, non-creature spells that you cast from exile have Conspire. What a weird line of text. Let's see what we can do with that, you know? Let's see what strange cards I can pull out from the entire history of Magic that would show off that I've done my homework on this, and also that can recontextualize that card if my opponents recognize it, or introduce them to silly cards like, you know, Muse Vessel or Ice Cauldron, for example.
Oh, Ice Cauldron's a... That's a classic.
Ice Cauldron is one of the silliest bits of magic art by Dan Frazier. And it's got text that, frankly, when you read it, you're like, ow, my eyes. And it's all really scrunched on there. And you'd think that maybe the Oracle text would do a good job at cleaning things up, but it does not. And it's like one of the few cards from the reserve list that's still like $1.50. And it's really dumb. But Ice Cauldron, for those of you who don't know, is a 4-mana artifact that says X tap. You may exile. I love that it says you may. You're activating this ability.
As though you would just choose not to.
I know. X tap, you may exile a non-land card from your hand. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled. Put a charge counter on this artifact and note the type and amount of mana spent to pay this activation cost. Activate only if there are no charge counters on this artifact. Tap, remove a charge counter from this artifact. Add this artifact's last noted type and amount of mana. Spend this mana only to cast the last card exiled with this artifact. So, you can't like stack things up on this at all, and you can't use the mana for anything but casting the spell. But it also introduces this weird element of like, technically, I could remove the charge counter and not cast the spell that I have in exile and just have that mana in my mana pool. Maybe there's something there, but really it's not. This is just a way to exile cards that are stuck in my hand that I want to conspire with Rasslin. But it's just altogether an extremely convoluted and silly card. And to show up to a table and show people and they go, why would you ever play this? And the answer is because it's fun. It's dumb. I love that I have this, you know? Steven, I'd like to check in with you before moving forward. Like, how you feeling? How you doing?
Doing all right.
Cool. I want to get into the topic of the podcast. I just wanted to see if there was anything that you had in mind that you wanted to chat about before we get into like a story or one of your pet peeves.
So the... I would say it's a sort of a I guess it's a story. It's kind of a little bit off the wall, but
okay. So let's get into a story.
I like to I like to reuse some of the sort of suites of cards that I have that I sometimes used at one point, even if it wasn't very effective, but just because it was something that I don't normally see.
So give us an example here. What do you mean by that?
So there's do you know of the card Political Trickery?
I think so. That's the one. I'm going to pull it up on Scryfall now, but it's an exchange card, right? It's Political Trickery, two and a blue sorcery, exchange control, target land you control, and target land an opponent controls.
Yes.
Period. Cool.
So there are a couple more blue cards that have that effect. There's a Vedalken Plotter from, I believe,
Yes,
Guild
I
Pact,
love that guy.
Or Dissension, one of those. And then there's a splice onto Arcane version of it from, I think it's Saviors of Kamigawa that does
Is
the same
really?
Thing. Yeah.
I have no idea.
So I at some point several years ago put those three cards in a deck with a bunch of lands that my opponents couldn't profitably use very well. Things like I would like for instance, Thawing Glaciers. If you activate it at the end of the turn, it will return to your hand.
Uh-huh.
So I would activate my Thawing Glaciers and then trade it for an opponent's land.
Wow.
But it would return to my hand at the end of the turn. Another one is Rainbow Veil, which I would pass to one opponent at the end of the turn, but I would trade it to another opponent. So the opponent I was trading it to would give me a land, but would actually lose the Rainbow Veil right away.
Brutal.
it's not that good, but it's I would just throw in a bunch of lands that couldn't tap for colored mana or couldn't tap for mana at all, and try to trade over these lands to an opponent.
Right.
And I actually have them in a deck now.
Okay.
Which is not a very good deck. It's held by one of the original 55 legends.
Okay.
Hunding Jornerson.
Is that the white blue one?
Yes.
Okay, I feel good about that. What do you call this deck? Because here's the thing, listeners, what you don't know, Steven, do you mind if I plug your Moxfield?
No, not Would at you- all.
So Steven is at Skull Cultist on Moxfield. Go ahead and give him a follow. But he's got great names and sometimes even a short primer description in the deck list that I recommend. What do you call this Hunding Gurnison deck?
Sharing Companion. It's a deck primarily meant to get shared fate out and then just force everyone to play everyone else's deck.
Oh, God. Now, here's the thing. You do that to me at my table among friends, we're having a crazy night.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like the kind of play style that requires some trust.
Yeah, this is the one. This is one I haven't pulled out that often.
I mean,
but
I love this, though. It's so fun. A crow and horse in a deck list is always going to make me go, okay, let's hear him out. Let's have some fun with it. So tell me more about this Hunding Jornerson deck, which, by the way, a 6-mana Azorius Commander, 5/4 with Rampage 1. So 3 white blue blue for a 5/4 with Rampage 1, that which means whenever this creature becomes blocked, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each creature blocking it beyond the first. So if he just gets a buff if he's double, triple, quadruple blocked, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Rampage, hell of a mechanic.
So I'd been wanting to build a deck with that as the commander, because that's one of the legends,
right.
Legends. And
exactly.
The flavor text about him being a companion had me looking for stuff, and I thought, what about a deck that does a lot of shared fate stuff, has the card shared fate in it, and isn't trying to, you know, do like the shared fate leveler thing, but just is actually trying to get people to be stuck like trying to work with someone else's cards.
You don't have that that Jumpstart Azorius legend in here, do you? Oh, I forget their name.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, it's...
I think I know which one you're talking about. I think that would probably be good in there, actually.
Ineaz, I think is Ineaz.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ineaz the Gale Forest that says it's a 3BBB 4/4 with flying. 2 and a hybrid Azorius attacking creatures with flying get +1/+1. And then whenever 3 or more creatures you control with flying attack, each player gains control of a non-land permanent of your choice controlled by the player to their right. So the flying element might be a little bit harder to accomplish with this list, but
yeah,
still one that I was like, oh, okay, this is in that kind of vein.
Yeah, there's definitely a better version of this deck that could be built if I were trying to I don't know, totally. Not optimize, but sort of make it make
understandable, sure.
Like upgrade it to be more smooth. Mm-hmm. It just had a bunch of cards that sort of made me smile. The whole land switching package is something I've reused in multiple decks, and it's never really been that good, but I always just kind of want to see if I can live the dream of just, you know, switching lands with an opponent multiple times and
sure.
having that like somehow, you know, like the game gets down to me and that person, but that person doesn't have access to the right colors because I have all that person's mountains or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the most recent game I actually played with this deck, I had an opponent with Anger in his graveyard, and I traded with Vedalken Plotter and got his only mountain. So shut down Anger for one turn before he found a second mountain.
Fair.
So it's not that great, but one of the lands that I can try to trade to people that doesn't tap for mana is the Tabernacle at Pendril Vale.
Oh,
and,
God.
Yeah. And the deck doesn't have a lot of creatures in it, and it doesn't also like use the Tabernacle in any other way.
Right.
So it's just kind of a, well, I can tax people and they'll probably attack me and kill me, but maybe I can trade the Tabernacle over to someone else.
And now we have to kill them.
Yeah. It's just kind of something I had been using when I used Political Trickery. And that was just kind of the only reason I went back to actually putting it in a deck. But
well, I mean, if you got it, there's going to be a place that you find for it. The kind of card that you're like, well,
yeah,
you know, this is a binder bound forever.
Well, I put it in this deck, which is the first deck I'd put it in for a while.
Sure.
And one of my opponents just had his commander. I think it was Omnath, Locus of Mana. And just paid one and ignored the land. And then another one, I think he had like 3 creatures that he cared about, so it ended up taxing him a little bit, but he was able to make plenty of mana. The third opponent was doing token generation and was really upset that the Tabernacle was out.
Understandably so.
And felt that it was he made a big deal about it being a game changer.
And I
just thought, well, yeah, it is on the Game Changers list. I don't really look at the Game Changers list. And I've had that comment a couple of times, usually with, like, I think it was with Demonic Tutor, which is a Game Changer, because I had a deck, you know, and I used Demonic Tutor to go find, I'm blanking on the name of the black enchantment that, I built a deck around it, basically. It was, makes it so that when opponents discard when opponents
Chains
have
Mephistopheles?
Warped Devotion.
Oh, great card.
Two in a black, whenever a permanent is returned to a player's hand, that player discards
a card.
So I just built a deck just to like get Warped Devotion out as soon as possible and just play a bunch of stuff that returns cards to everybody's hands. And I would try to do some, you know, like Waste Not or Geth's Grimoire, get something like that in there, but usually it didn't work. But
right. It's
yeah,
also the kind of plan that's going to get a lot of attention. You're going to get a lot of attention from people that want to come hurt you now, and that's going to be what it is.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, they swing in with their 2020 commander, and I just go, yep, I'm dead.
That's done, yeah. Well, that's the thing about the way you're brewing, because, like, I do see that you have decks that are, like, do a crazy weird thing and, you know, kind of, like, capable of hanging and capable of playing the kind of game that, like, is on the more... casual, less restrictive end. And then you have this kind of, like, the way I see it is, like, some of your decks feel like expansions on a board game, you know, whereas other decks are like they fit within the mold of the board game in that this is kind of a little bit expected of this play style, and it's a regular, like, you know, we're four players, this deck's gonna make creatures and slam and that's that. Whereas you also have this one where it's like, okay, now we're gonna introduce this theme where I'm exchanging things. Or now we're going to go expansion on the hard mode, which means Warp Devotion is out regularly, and every turn you're bouncing stuff to your hands, you know? Like, I think that there's something fun to having that kind of difference between the decks that you own, like, that you run at a given time. Like, you don't want everything to be too samey, but you also want to make sure that you're enjoying the playstyle that you're playing, you know? While also offering up a different vibe with each game, you know.
I haven't been I don't regularly hear a lot of talk about game changers or brackets. Most of my opponents don't come out and say, well I have this deck is bracket 4 and this one's bracket 3. Most the majority of the people I've been playing with have just kind of been playing whatever decks they wanted to play.
So is this kind of at an LGS setting, or is this?
Yeah, it's one of about three LGSs that are local to me.
And are these folks like people that you know and recognize, or is it kind of a big community and you cycle through?
I do play with the same people over time quite a bit, but I've also seen a lot of new faces.
Sure, I think that like playing with a bunch of people regularly ends up kind of. Like, it's an informal play group in that way where there's trust built up or like things like that. So that's interesting to note. That's cool. So you were saying that you had a story, but that you use these packages in different decks.
I guess the thing I'm wondering there is if I'm just like flagrantly ignoring the game changer thing, but sometimes people do care about it. Am I the bolus?
Well, I mean, I think that it's something to get in the habit of doing. I think that the thing about the bracket system is that it's meant for those of us who are entrenched enough in the game to know that it exists, right? It's meant for the people who are going to go out seeking this kind of information, who look up a banned list and not just end it there, who go on to say, okay, well, I want to buy cards. I'm not going to buy a pre-con and call it off. I have to like build these decks, play with these people regularly, look like follow preview seasons, etc. Like really getting into Magic. And so if you're aware of all this stuff to the point where you're reading weekly columns about the game, I would expect someone like you to kind of mention the bracket, even if offhandedly, you know, to be like, this is technically bracket 3. You know, I've got a couple game changers in here. That's bracket 3. Do you need to reveal the game changers? Not so much. I think there's a level of like trust that could go into that, and you want to keep some surprise. But it'll be apparent once you hit like, you know, Rhystic Study. You know, you slam a Rhystic Study, and people are like, "Well, there's one of them, right?" I don't think that you're the bolus for not having the bracket conversation, because if you're not kicking it off and nobody else is, I think you're all just in agreement. I do think that it's like good for you to do though. I think it'll make for some of the most satisfying games I've had have been not necessarily getting the whole deck story before playing. So like if you sat down and you said this deck is got three game changers in it because it's a weird theme and I need the support to tutor some stuff. My commander is essentially vanilla for colors because I love legends. And there's some like swapping shenanigans where like we trade cards on battlefields. Like, great, cool. And then you get to discover that over time and feel that out. And that kind of preps me for this idea that like, oh, well, you know, I'm not someone who likes having my cards on someone else's board. This is something that I want to avoid. So if you have this discussion can happen. And you're like, if you have a different deck, I really would not like to play against that one. Then that's the discussion that's had. Or do you have a system for people who don't want to represent their cards on your board? You know, and I think that's part of being a Magic player now is Commander being so popular, being ever like it keeps growing. It's not going to stop either. And the things that are changing now are changing a little bit faster because the rules committee is no longer, it's all controlled by Wizards. And now that's why we have this transparent discussion about the hybrid mana and a commander identity and stuff. And so I think it behooves us to kind of introduce the conversation if we're aware of it. And if it kind of gets hand waved and you're okay with that, then that's fine. But I think that if you're, you know, if you're playing with, I don't want to say like untrusted play, but if you're playing with people that you don't regularly play with or you don't know, then it's definitely worth it to kind of get a read on them, you know? Like, for instance, if I'm playing with my play group and I know these guys very well, I'm sitting down with these guys and I know what they get up to, and my buddy Chris pulls out a new deck and he says, okay, the commander for this is the Green Goblin, and you know, that's all I'm giving you. And I go, okay, I kind of have an idea of what's coming, but I trust Chris to not be somebody who brings a deck to the table that's going to like run the table and ruin our night. And then if he does, we get to clown on him for a little bit. He doesn't pull it out for the rest of the night. He tunes it down or changes things up, or we play similarly powered decks against each other afterwards, you know? So I think that when it's untrusted, you should definitely be looking to have the conversation. But if nobody's having it, if you're proposing it, it gets shut down, or nobody's proposing it and you're all just happy to pull out decks and shuffle up, I guess that's a conversation in its own way, you know? So I can't call you a bolus here. I don't think that's fair. What is, because you mentioned, like, you don't really think about the game changers. You mentioned that, like, you don't really think about brackets and stuff.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
is
I mean,
that for you?
Well, you know, I built, those came out, they announced the game changer list. What was that, this year or was that last year? I'm trying to remember.
It would have been last year. It would have been this year.
Yeah, it was early this year, right?
Yeah, it was in Chicago for Aetherdrift.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you know, I built 29 decks last year.
Okay.
and I haven't been building at quite the same pace this year. Just had, you know, life get in the way a little bit.
Oh,
But I built 29 decks last year. I built 30 the year before that. I had kind of a process going, and when they introduced that, I didn't know what bracket people would want to play at. I didn't necessarily know how much it would matter, and so it seems like I think I've seen inconsistent results, and I if it's a card like Rhystic Study. Or if it's a card like Cyclonic Rift or something like that, then I'm like, well, I get it. Like, these are cards that people are trying to use to do something to play in a very powerful way. They're trying to get a significant advantage, not in any sort of scummy way, but just in a just as in they're trying to play the game and they're trying to do something powerful.
Right.
But there are also cards on that game changer list, like Demonic Tutor. That's probably been the most common one where, you know, I've seen, like, not every time I play it or anything, but I've seen people note, oh, well, it's a game changer. It's the card I've been putting in every black deck because I want to find the card I actually want to cast.
Right.
Like, I'm not.
Yeah. That's a tough one because like, yes, I understand where you're coming from on that front. Like it is, it's as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a tutors guy. I've never been a tutors guy. I'm not about to start being a tutors guy. It's not for me. I just never, ever really thought to be, tutor guy. However, I understand when people build around a card that doesn't come easy to the deck. You know, like you've got, you know, hey, I want to build around these two as if they were my commander. That's great. Well, you're going to need some tutors to really get there consistently and so on. To me, tutors kind of go against the spirit of the format personally. So it's the I've even written about this. I had an article, I think it was on EDH Rec or on Commander's Herald. I can't remember which at this point, but I think that there is something to be said for keeping variants going. I think it's so important to make sure that like you're not always going for the same stuff, and tutoring tends to lead to that kind of play pattern where people find their toolbox and that's that. However, one of the exceptions I've noted is exactly what you've described. I have this idea for a deck. I want the star of this deck to be this stupid little leprechaun that really is the glue to everything that this deck is trying to do. I'd put it in the command zone if I could. It's just not that kind of deck, though. So I need a couple tutors to go get that out. And to me, hell yeah, have some fun with it, right? But if you're, you know, playing a reanimator commander, like back when I had Marin, when I first built Marin, I was tutoring. I was buried alive. I was entombing. I would get some stuff to the graveyard and immediately reanimate it, and then it would be like a problem. And then I saw myself picking those same cards over and over again, and you know, it became repetitive. It's like, that's why I'm not a big fan of tutors. But to your point, Demonic Tutor being a game changer, it's a little silly. I don't think tutors should necessarily be on the game changer list, but I think the density of tutors should be considered. So for instance, if we're talking about CDH, you know, any given deck, you're looking at several tutors, and that's just how it's going to be, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, I'm like, if you've got like 6-7 tutors in the deck, I'm not about it. If you got a handful, if you've got a really strong theme and that's what you're after and they're all looking for that one card so you can play it, and then that card goes away and you have 5 dead cards in the rest of the deck, like, God bless, enjoy, have some fun with it. I don't think that Demonic Tutor should be a game changer. This is the hot take part of the episode. But you were saying, yeah, like the game changer list does feel a little like you mentioned Rhystic Study. Rhystic Study is obviously one of the, like Rhystic Study and Smothering Tide are two that I've removed from decks. I've started taking Jeskha's Will out of my decks because of Josh Lee Kwai said some stuff about it last year that I was like, or earlier this year that I was like, yeah, it does fit the game changer bill. It totally means that, like, you know, you pull so far ahead. Rachel's pulling Soul Ring out of her decks. You know, there's a lot happening with this idea.
I actually haven't built a deck with Soul Ring in it this year. I kind of started, like, at some point, I just like went cold turkey on Soul Ring.
Can I tell you something, Steven, just real quick? Yeah. Sorry, Ken. Absolutely stoked about that. I am also someone who has started cutting Soul Ring. Just because it's like, you know, if you get it in your opening hand, you pull too far ahead and nobody's happy. And then you get it later, then you're kind of like, well, I wish this was some action. You know, I don't know. Soul Ring, you don't need to be in every deck. Some decks are worth it. Others, not so much. But yeah, I'm pretty stoked that people are starting to realize that there's far too many Magic cards to be using Soul Ring in each of your decks when you can have something fun like this Ashling Leprechaun in it instead. So yeah, I don't think you're the bolus for that. That's for me. Yeah, the bracket conversation isn't for everybody. But let's talk more about what we started talking about, which is the game changer list and the bracket stuff. Is it mainly that, because it shouldn't be a surprise that you've been playing Magic for some time, right? You've got this affinity for Legends. You've got the Tabernacle on deck. Have you been playing Magic for a while?
Yeah, I started in around early 97 with Visions and Portal and 5th Edition. And
hell yeah.
So yeah, I've been playing Magic for a long time. I know that some of the times that it's brought up in the mm-hmm. context where I've seen it, it's a little bit, I don't want to impute something on people. It's a little bit underhanded sometimes. It's a like sometimes people will see a particular card, not always in my deck, but I've seen it with a lot of mine. You know, I there was some game where, you know, I was playing, it might have been Painted Green, actually. You know, I played Savannah, and oh, it's Savannah. It's a dual land. It's one of the original dual lands. Yeah. You must be, such a powerhouse there. And
but that's ignoring the surrounding context of the fact that you're a vanilla commander.
Exactly. I feel like some of the times when people bring up, they see a certain card and they have a reaction, and sometimes I feel like that reaction's maybe either inauthentic or exaggerated because the person wants to sort of
politically it takes
something.
The heat off of them and puts it onto you.
You're
an easier target for that. I understand that, but also dual lands just really nice and cool to have. They're beautiful things, and they're very expensive, and they're a bit of a status symbol. Awesome. But they're just a land, like they are basically sometimes worse than a command tower for you. You know what I mean? Like they are just lands that enter untapped and are helpful for your mana base.
Yeah.
If a Rhystic Study hits the battlefield, I'm not stoked about it. You know?
Sure.
I say the only two I bring up are Smothering Tithe and Rhystic Study, because I can't think of other game changers at the moment. But I guess Tabernacle is one of them. Again, I wouldn't be stoked about a Tabernacle in a deck that I have a lot of creatures that want to stick around, but most of my decks want my creatures to die. Fine by me.
Yeah. Tabernacle's not even good against some decks, and then there's the whole consideration of whether it's being used in some sort of, you know, because there's always like the classic Tabernacle plus Living Plane, so that all lands are creatures, and then they have to pay for themselves to not die.
And
stuff like that. But I mentioned earlier. Like I mentioned earlier, I was using it in a deck that tries to just trade it to somebody so that they have a land that doesn't tap for mana, and I have their forest or whatever.
I mean, it does feel like the most fair application of Tabernacle in an EDH game. Like it's pretty silly to say. I think the game changer list, it's never perfect, right? Like it's what we're looking at right now, and I'm gonna pull up the game changer list as it's been updated. The game changer list went through a couple changes, taking Urza, Lord High Artificer off the list, and frankly, I'll say it's still, that seems to me, a huge game changer.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. You know, should it be on the list? Most definitely, especially if it's the head of a deck. Same with Yuriko, the Tiger's Shadow, but Yuriko in a regular ninja deck is probably not doing the work that it would be doing in the command zone. So I understand taking that off. But all told, cards that stayed on the game changer list, you've got Consecrated Sphinx. You know, is that a game changer? It does give you so much value. But like, I don't know.
Well, one of the other ones that I've seen people mention in my decks, and I don't think that this one's inauthentic. I think that this is born of a legitimate impulse to try to conform to like what the expectations should be at a table, is Mox Diamond. because, like I said, I've been running a lot of decks without Solring. But if I, uh-huh. in particular, if it's a deck that uses a lot of like Crucible of Worlds type things,
mm-hmm.
then I've often thrown in my Mox Diamond, and I know that sometimes people see that one card and think, oh, well, that's, you know, it's a game changer. Yeah. It's such a powerhouse, and I just think, well, it's good, but it just taps for a single mana. That's all. That's all it does. What about the rest of the deck?
Right. So the idea is that the thing is, mana is a resource in the game that allows you to do everything that you need to do in the game. So what it ends up becoming is more of like a harbinger of what's next, and you're going to get there sooner. It tells people like, oh, your turn one is turn two.
Yeah. You know?
And so it's just, that's what makes that scary. And that's what makes it like a game changer in the sense that like you have just advanced considerably from this mana rock. Right.
Yeah.
But if you're doing that in a deck where, well, let's see, there are no like artifact cast synergies. You've got like an 8-mana commander that doesn't do nothing really special. Like, I think there's context to be keeping an eye on. But that said, it technically brings you into the game changers, the bracket 3. And that should be considered. You know, I think that's a conversation that still needs to happen, being like, I've got a game changer in here. It's a mana rock. It's Mox Diamond because my commander costs 9 mana.
Yeah.
I'm playing the Unspeakable from Kamigawa.
That'd be a fun one.
Yeah, and that's what that's why I packed it in with all the mana rocks I can. You know, there's a different vibe to seeing Turgrid, God of Fright, in a discard deck. You know,
oh right,
right, or like I think that like Stax isn't fun or anything, but Grand Arbiter Augustine the Fourth is hell of a Stax piece. It's a game changer for sure. People hate it. I understand why. But as far as the game goes, there are worse. You know?
Yeah.
This one isn't locking you down. You're just paying one more per spell, and I'm getting a discount on mine. You know? Like, you get it.
Yeah. I know that there was some discussion about why Solring isn't a game changer.
Right.
I don't know if I guess I don't really buy it myself, but
they can't do it. They can't make it a game changer because then every precon is a bracket 3.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that because because of this, we can't have Solring on the game changer list. But you ask me what card has had the biggest impact in the early game in every game of Magic I've played and had this come out. It's Solring. Solring to me absolutely feels like a game changer in the early game. It absolutely feels like a card that if I don't have it in my deck, I'm happy for it. And that makes me feel like I'm playing at a lower bracket level. And if somebody has it off the rip in a game, I know that advantage is going to become insurmountable pretty quickly if I don't do anything about it or put up some defenses. I think that Solring is absolutely a game changer, but because it's only a game changer from like turns 1 through 5, it doesn't quite register the same as like, you know, all these other ones like Necropotence, Necropotence.
Well, sure, but like Ancient Tomb, that one's a game changer.
It absolutely is, and it should be. Ancient Tomb should be. Us saying, come on, Solring is on the game changer list. It's just called Ancient Tomb. Mana Vault is a game changer.
Right. That's another one.
It doesn't untap, you know? Like Mana Vault, oh God, it feels so silly. Mana Vault taps for 3, but you have to pay 4 to untap it. And if it's tapped, you get dealt 1 damage. It's a lot of downside on the card because it is powerful. If there aren't those downsides, it costs 1 mana to tap for 3 mana. That's a pretty good ritual on an artifact.
Right. And I'm going to sacrifice it to Kurt Clan Ironworks anyway. So
there, another one. Yeah. But that's it. It's like, hey, Solring. Yeah. Like, you know, Grim Monolith. Anyway, you understand where I don't have to preach to you about this stuff. It's just, It is silly to me that that there's never going to be a genuine... There can't be a real discussion around Sol Ring being a game changer. I don't think it's possible.
Maybe not.
But that said, this is why... Like, us having this conversation was not in preparation for a game. But we did learn a lot about where we're coming at it from... the perspective of what we consider to be the game changers. And this is the kind of conversation that if had before the game, we understand what we're looking for in the game, right? We have both balked and like kind of like, you know, bristled at the mention of some of these, right?
Yeah.
And if those are in the deck, you'd want to know about them. Or if those are in the deck, you're got a groan on deck ready for that as a reaction, ready to go. But some of them just feel like fine and fair in the right context. But either way, we're prepared for that now, you know?
Yeah.
I know that in your deck you have Tabernacle. I know that in your deck you've got this Demonic Tutor to go fetch up a particular enchantment. I know you've got a Mox Diamond in your, like, 8-drop commander list, you know? But to me, in that context, it feels way more acceptable, and I don't feel bad playing my Bracket 2 deck that doesn't play any game changers against your deck that's got like 2 because of the way that we've discussed it, right?
Yeah.
So I think that to come back to your story / your question for whether or not you're the bolus, I don't think you're the bolus, but I think the conversation's a lot easier to have than you might think. And it's one that will give you a little bit more reassurance going into the game, knowing that you're all on the same page looking for the same kind of fun. And I think that's a good place to leave it there, I think. What do you think about that, Steven?
Makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with me. And you know, first of all, I appreciate you reading the articles every week and taking the time to comment on them. That's something I also appreciate. I appreciate you submitting to the column as well. And I can't thank you enough. It's really, you are... someone that when I think maybe like the third article in a row that you commented on, I told my girlfriend, I said, I think I might have like a real deal fan of the article here. The column has like an actual fan, you know, somebody who's reading it regular. And that felt like a nice big, positive thing that, made me feel really good about what I was getting up to with the column. So I really appreciate you and your impact on me that you've had, maybe that you didn't even realize you had on me. And I really wanted the opportunity to let you know directly that thank you. Your continued engagement with the column and like the things that you bring to the table when in the discussion, like among other comments or with like your own response to the article series, it's really meant a lot over the years. So I appreciate you. I just wanted to let you know that before we skedaddle.
Oh yeah, thanks. I think it's a good column, so that's good to hear.
Thanks, Steven. Well, would you like to tell anybody where they can find you or what they could check out, or if you don't want them directed in your direction, do you want to maybe shine a spotlight on something you've been enjoying before we call this one to a close?
You know, there's a Nothing jumps out at me right now.
Well, we mentioned Skull Cultist on Moxfield.
Yep,
you've got all your deck list there. So at the very least, that's okay.
They should check out Am I the Bolcast? Right?
I mean, if they're hearing this, I think we won. Okay, perfect. That sounds good. Well, thanks again, Steven. I appreciate you coming on.
All right.
You can find Am I the Bolcast on all... Well, you're already listening to it. Follow us on Blue Sky at Am I the Bolcast. Follow me at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza. I'm a stand-up comedian. I've got a comedy album out. Check that out. That always helps. Come see me perform live. But don't forget to check out my weekly column, Am I the Bolus, over on edhrec.com. And keep an eye out for more projects that are coming. Shout out to Michael Solani, a.k.a. Games Freak SA, and Morgan Sanchez, my co-hosts on this podcast, who we're going to be hearing from shortly, because we're doing another mailbag soon. So keep an eye on the feed. We'll be back very soon. And for now, it's time to scoot the day. Thanks again, Steven. Take care, everybody.